Welcome to the Juice on the Cuse podcast. Matt D'Agostino, Wes Chang, Saturday, December 16th. We're talking orange hoops right now and a weekend tilt against the Oregon Ducks. Not a familiar foe for the Syracuse Orange. But here we are, Wes. We're 10 games into the season, 7-3 record. All three losses have been to name brand programs, so no upsets along the way to this point in the non-conference schedule. But 10 games into the Adrian Autry era, what do we think of the Syracuse hoops team at this point?
Well, I got to tell you, Matt, you and I have been watching Syracuse basketball for most of our lives, and this goes back, you know, 20, even 30 years. So it's really weird seeing Syracuse in this Adrian Autry era play primarily man-to-man defense. I mean, you and I just spent all the time defending Jim Boeheim and defending the type of zone defense that he played and having him recruit those guys into the system. So having them play primarily man-to-man and then only maybe one out of every, 10, 20 plays kind of switch into that zone as a kind of change-up zone defense, that is very strange to me. I pulled up these stats, though, on KenPom. Last year, when Jim Boeheim's last year at Syracuse, Syracuse was ranked 205th in adjusted defense. The season before that, which was the first year he had a losing record in his entire career, Syracuse was ranked 185th. Now, this season, they're ranked 87th. So I'm not saying that they are much better in the zone in terms of the overall NCAA, but you can see there are actually improvements there 10 games through the season. So for me, it's definitely seeing this defense and seeing the man-to-man as the primary defense still a little off-putting to me. What about you, Matt?
I was kind of waiting to see like how long it would take me for my eyes and my mind to kind of adjust to it. And honestly, like, you see it and you're like, okay, they're playing man-to-man defense. It was almost like the traditionalist in me never wanted to see the zone defense go. And now it's in there and it's like, all right, they're playing man. Cool. We can kind of like go on with our lives now. But I do think they've been active in the defense. I think they're creating turnovers, which is good to see. It'll be interesting to see whether in the coming years, whether they recruit the guys that you were talking about, you know, would fit that zone defense well. The Damone Browns, the Hakeem Warwicks, the long, lanky guys that can you know, cover a lot of ground in the zone defense. It'll be interesting to see whether they want to use the same kinds of guys now that they're going man-to-man most of the time. But for me, I think the most startling thing has been an absence of multiple consistent outside threats. I think Chris Bell at 38% for the year so far has been great in that role. And I think we've seen kind of a progression to him. That's been good to see. And Judah Mintz, for all the talk about him not having an outside shot in the attempts that he's taken, has been fine percentage-wise. So it'll be interesting to see whether he continues to kind of trend in that direction. And we thought Justin Taylor would be kind of one of those guys to step up, and he is at times, but I think it's been very noticeable that this team is much more a drive and get to the bucket team than they are spot up on the outside and knock them down.
Yeah, and to your point, Matt, outside shooting is definitely one of the things that Syracuse needs to work on. And I'm going to present Exhibit A of J.J. Starling. And, you know, I pulled some stats last night. He started through the first 7 games of the season. He was 1-for-19 from downtown. 1-for-19. Let that sink in for a moment. Now, we both watched the Georgetown game. He went 3-for-3. He raised that percentage up to a balmy 22.2% from three-point land. But, you know that basketball players are rhythm guys. And once you see a couple buckets go through, once you get in that rhythm, that can really start to cascade and he can start to shoot well. So what I'm hoping here is that this is a sign for J.J. Starling to come in. He doesn't need to shoot 40% from downtown, but he needs to at least be a threat and shoot at least in that 30% range. Now, speaking of that, you mentioned Justin Taylor. He's only shooting 31.4% from downtown. So he was brought in as a shooter. He was expected to be, you know, a little bit more like Chris Bell. He hasn't been so far, but I would like to see a little bit more consistency out of him. Another guy that I thought would actually shoot better this season was Benny Williams. He's been MIA. He was suspended in the beginning of the season for violating team rules. He's basically in Adrian Autry's doghouse right now. So I don't know exactly what's going on with him, whether he's going to get back in the rotation, and when he does, how well he's going to shoot. But I was kind of expecting improved outside shooting from him. So that's definitely one area that I think Syracuse needs to improve on. But Matt, I wanted to raise this one topic, which is man crush on Malik Brown. Is it big? Is it bigger? Or is it biggest? Because I think he gets my Josh Pace award. You know, Josh Pace was one of my favorite guys.
Wow. That is, That is lofty, lofty status in the West Chang brain. I know that for sure. But, you know, Malik Brown's been good. I think he's a consistent threat on the boards, which I think, again, is something that Syracuse could probably use a couple more guys in that regard. And you know, I just like the way he gets after. I think he gets it. I think he understands the game, and he is one of those guys who tends to be in the right place at the right time. But I'm waiting for the inevitable haircut from Malik Brown. So much hair going on there that, like, I don't know whether it happens when you're in college or maybe when you become a professional, you get into your 20s, your 30s, and you're like, you know what? Like, I'm maturing. I need to, you know, get rid of all the hair. I think it's time. I'm going to start taking myself more seriously now. And I want everybody to know that I'm buttoned up.
You and I have been doing this podcast for two episodes now, and you were two for two in mentioning hair. So I just wanted to point that out there. You know,
duly noted. I'll see how I can weave it into the third show for sure. But I'm waiting to see when that haircut happens. I may just play around with Photoshop in the meantime to see what it may look like, because I'm waiting for it. That is a lot of hair, Wesley. That's all I've got to say about it.
And one topic I also wanted to move on to, Matt, is you have a monthly column at The Juice Online on the Rivals Network where you talk about Syracuse guys in the NBA. You know, we touched on Judah Mintz. I think he's going to be an NBA guy eventually. But you wrote this column. What was startling to me was the lack of words on the page, because Syracuse only has three NBA players right now. That is, as far as I can recall, one of the least amount of NBA players that they've had at the same place at the same time. So break that all down for us, Matt.
Yeah, don't go reworking my contract based on word count now, okay? I know I'm writing less because there's less guys to write about, but I want to make sure, I demand, in fact, that I make the same bolstering salary that I have been in years past. But yeah, there's really only three guys to talk about. It's Jeremy Grant and the others. Grant has been awesome. I think probably exceeded anybody's expectations of what his pro career would look like, coming from a second round draft pick to now making $30 million a year and averaging 20 points plus per year for the last couple of years now. So he's settled into Portland, and they're a team that's definitely in a rebuild. So since Damian Lillard left town, they're going with a youth movement. And I expect that come the trade deadline, there will be a lot of contending teams calling Portland to try and trade for Jeremy Grant. So I think he's a guy who fits into any roster seamlessly. He's not a selfish guy. He'll do the dirty work. He'll do all the little things that you don't normally get from guys that are, you know, making that kind of money. You know, he still has a very workmanlike approach to the game. Other than that, though, it's Cole Swider, who's part of Heat culture now, but not really seeing the floor all that often. And O'Shea Brissett is with Boston for the first time in his career. And after carving a rotation spot out with Indiana, I thought Boston was actually a really good place for him. They do not have a deep bench. Their starting five is ridiculous. But I thought, you know, after the seventh or eighth guy, Brissett would get a chance to join the rotation. And it just hasn't presented itself at this point. So he's in a good spot. Maybe we see the third Syracuse player to win an NBA title, dare I say, if O'Shea Brissett and the Celtics can get the job done. They'll definitely be in the hunt come May and June. But yeah, it's Jeremy Grant and the Pips at this point in the NBA.
It looks like someone's trying to challenge Dion Waiters as the third person to win an NBA championship. We'll take a quick break. Aaron Heisen from Duck Sports Authority when we return, and this is the Juice on the Cues podcast.
Welcome back to the Juice on the Cues podcast. Matt D'Agostino, Wes Chang here, and we are bringing in, for a little Oregon Ducks perspective, Aaron Heisen of the Oregon Rivals site, Duck Sports Authority. Aaron, thanks for taking some time with us. I'll be honest, I'm sure there are a lot of Syracuse fans who, other than knowing that it's the school that got Quincy Guerrier after Syracuse and the school that was supposed to get Dior Johnson after he decommitted from Syracuse, there's probably not a lot of Orange fans who are that familiar with the Oregon Ducks program. So as these two teams are about to meet on Sunday, tell the Syracuse faithful, what can they expect to see from the Oregon Ducks this weekend?
Well, it's funny you mentioned those two players, because Dior was, you know, flamed out at Pittsburgh, and GaryAFlame.org. So it seems like we do have some things in common. But yeah, what can you guys expect from Oregon? You guys can expect an incomplete team right now. Two of their most significant contributors, Bolly Dante and Nate Biddle, are injured, will be for the foreseeable future. But I think what that has kind of opened the door for is a team full of guards who are just scrappy, shoot well, drive the lane hard and kick it out and just kind of play off one another. It doesn't seem like anybody's an alpha and really ball hogs. It doesn't seem like anybody's scared to get their own. So I do think there is kind of a level of intensity with this team. It's more of a team that matches and mirrors Altman's teams of the past that had, you know, defensive guards like Dylan Brooks or scorers like Tyler Dorsey. And so I think that he's having a lot of fun with that, just trying to figure out who gels with who on the perimeter. And I think that in this part of the season, before they get into Pac-12 play, it's really just a team that's trying to stay afloat, figure out their rotations until those big return, because Altman was expecting to play through Dante a lot this season.
Aaron, we're talking about Jackson Shellstad, highly touted in-state recruit for the Ducks. What's been the best part of his game to this point so far?
Yeah, so Jackson's actually a guy that I got to watch a lot during high school, because I just graduated from the University of Oregon last year, and I did a lot of freelance work covering high school sports. And he was always a guy that I thought was very comfortable speaking to the media. And that's shown, you know, thus far. I think he's only spoken a few times to the media, but rarely ever at Oregon do they allow freshmen to speak to the media. It's just kind of a policy they've had, but that hasn't been the thing with Jackson Shellstad. And I think that you kind of saw that after his game-winning shot last week against Michigan, just how he was out there talking about the team and why it was a team win, even though he was in the spotlight. So I think that leadership, speaking to the media, that openness. But I think on the court, the thing that impressed me the most is just the fearlessness. Even when it wasn't falling in the first and second half, like that debut was kind of it was overshadowed by that game-winning shot. It wasn't the greatest game for him. He was missing a lot of shots. You know, you saw a lot of freshman nerves from him, but it's the fearlessness just to be able to take a shot when the game is on the line and hit it. And I think that's the best thing from Jackson so far.
You mentioned Dana Altman, Aaron, and we're speaking with Aaron Heisen from Duck Sports Authority. Altman, you know, kind of flies under the radar a little bit, at least maybe on the national stage, maybe not out there, but he's led Oregon to the NCAA tournament 7 of the last 10 tournaments, 3 Sweet 16s, an Elite Eight, a Final Four, and in all 13 of his seasons, he's had at least 20 wins. So what could you tell us about Altman? What has he been able to do to have the success that he's had in a place that, you know, isn't necessarily a basketball hotbed out there in Oregon?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny you say that now that they have two really good recruits from Oregon that are going to be leading them this year. Mookie Cook out as well with an injury. But I do think the reason why he's been able to sustain success is because of his ability to attract graduate transfers or JUCO transfers, and also keep players that are there for 4 years. Like Dylan Brooks was a four-year guy. Eugene Omarui was an older player, and it's interesting, like, now that they're kind of, the last two seasons they've missed the NCAA tournament just because they've lacked, you know, star power and a lot, had dealt with a lot of injuries. But even during those press conferences, he's mentioning those guys that used to be there, those veteran players that were always in the gym early, and he kind of misses guys like that, and I think that Oregon's kind of withered with the with NCAA turning into a very big one and done kind of atmosphere. And I think Syracuse has as well. There's less of those guys that are going to stay 4 years. There's more guys going to the G League overseas, and Altman's kind of lost his touch with that. But I think you're seeing, I mean, hopefully see that more with this squad. I think Shellstad's talented enough to go to the NBA whenever he wants to, but, you know, because it is his hometown school, maybe he plays a few more years. But I do think that it's because of having that veteran experience and being able to have his imprint on guys that stay there a little while.
This is completely unrelated to Sunday's game, but you've mentioned Dylan Brooks a couple of times. Obviously, in the last year or so, we've seen the antics that Dylan Brooks has had in Memphis, now in Houston with LeBron and all this stuff. Was this him back at Oregon as well? And maybe it just didn't see the light of day, or is this something brand new? I mean, it's just, It's so interesting, absurd, ridiculous. I don't know the right word for it, but give me a little intel here. Was Dylan Brooks always like this?
I think it's interesting, like with guys like Dylan Brooks, Draymond Green, they have like the fire inside of them to play aggressively. And that can be, you know, put in a positive way, in an additive way, like on the court, playing tough defense, fighting through screens, you know, leading your team. And that's what you want to see from a guy who plays with a lot of intensity and fiery energy. But then when they get to the NBA or Draymond now in the later part of his career, I don't know if this is a generality, but just with those two guys, it turns into more negative things. Hitting opponents, lashing out at the refs, taking errant shots. Dylan Brooks is someone that I've heard negative things about in his personal life as well. Not something that I want to get into right now, but he's someone that, as a Duck journalist and supporter, I is someone that we don't really associate with much anymore. I don't respect kind of his antics, especially kind of what he did to Jordan. I guess Jordan Poole, I think, was the last one that he kind of went at. I don't really know, but yeah, Dylan Brooks is not someone that represents Oregon well anymore. But when he was there, I think that fiery energy was put in a positive way.
Thanks, Aaron. We really appreciate having you on.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Well, hopefully we get a good game next weekend. But yeah, you guys have a good one.
You too.
And we're back on the Juice on the Cuse podcast. We're going to wrap things up here. Matt, I want to wrap things up on Syracuse guys who are still playing college basketball. We mentioned the NBA component, but there are 9 guys that formerly played at Syracuse. We talked about Quincy Gurrier earlier, but there are still other guys that are kicking around. Some of them, you think they still have college eligibility, but with that COVID year, there are actually some 6th-year seniors. So some of the names I want to mention: Bryson Cadine. When's the last time you heard that name? He plays at Fairfield now. Robert Braswell, still with the Charlotte 49ers, but he's only playing about 10 minutes a game. Woody Newton, he went to Oklahoma State. Now he's actually in the Patriot League. He's playing for George Mason now. Kadari Richmond, still with Seton Hall. So, and of course, you know, I think the two departures that hurt the most: Joe Girard, still on an undefeated Clemson team. Of course, Jesse Edwards, doing really well with West Virginia. I think Jesse Edwards really is the biggest loss because, you know, Syracuse just doesn't have that offensive and defensive center that they've really wanted in the past year. So those are some of the guys that are actually still kicking around in the NCAA. Figured it'd be fun to close out the show on that. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Jesse Edwards. He would look awfully good in the middle of that Syracuse lineup this year. And Kadari was a guy that I really liked in his time at Syracuse. So it's funny, like, kind of out of sight, out of mind with a lot of these guys. I haven't heard those names since they left the SU Hill. But those guys and Joe Girard, obviously, was a good, solid piece for Syracuse during his time there. And again, we talk about needing a shooter from the outside. He would be a good complement to go with Chris Bell. But that's the nature of the beast these days, is who's going where and who's still got eligibility. I know I've got 4 full years of college sports eligibility left, Wes. Maybe I enter the transfer portal next summer. You never know.
Just make sure you don't injure that hamstring again, Matt.
I'm sure it'll go in about 4 minutes of running up and down the court. So I'll probably stick away. I think any point guard's job is pretty safe at the SU Hill.
That's it for us. For Matt D'Agostino, this is Wes Chang. You've been listening to the Juice on the Cuse podcast presented by Believe in Rivals, and we'll see you next time.